Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
Yeah, August 10th.
Is that the date?
It is. My goodness. We are almost approaching the middle of August. Where has this summer gone?
I don't know. I've been doing the radio. I haven't been paying attention, man.
Yeah, and you've also been driving through the country.
8,000 miles on my car.
On his car.
Yeah.
And he was out there working.
I think I completely decreased the value of my car, the exact amount I was paid. It all worked out great. You know? So we're good to go.
What's wrong with that picture,
That's
though?
Right. That's
oh,
right.
Oh, my goodness.
How you been, man? I miss seeing you.
Good. Thank you very much. It was kind of odd not having having 2 week break from the show.
Yeah.
Kind of nice, too. It allowed me to do some
I didn't get any frantic phone calls from you just dying to hear my voice, man. What happened?
Well, I think we texted a few times.
A couple times. I tell you, I was missing you. One of the things I was missing, and I was so thrilled with how many amazing artistic endeavors are going on across the country.
Yeah.
But I missed chatting about the L.A. art scene. You know, mm-hmm. I missed knowing what's going on in town. And, of course, we have so many cool things coming up here in Los Angeles.
We do, indeed.
Yeah.
And two of them are sitting right here in our studio.
No doubt about it. As we said, it is August 10th, and we're looking forward to a very exciting end of the summer theater schedule here in Los Angeles with some truly amazing shows now playing or just about to open.
And or being extended and extended and extended.
That's true. Right? We have a guest who can comment on that a little bit today, too. Well, then we'd better hurry here and introduce both of these people sitting here next to me. Remarkable performers. They're in studio with us today, and we get to talk about everything that's going on here in LA.
Let's do that, Andrew. And we are thrilled, ladies and gentlemen, to say hello to a pair of stars who are as beautiful as they are talented. Please welcome Betts Malone and Kate Manzio.
Welcome. Welcome, both. So glad you guys are here with us today. Are you happy and doing well?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Very cool.
You may speak, ladies.
We scared them off with our intro.
We're very informal here. Seriously, very informal.
Which is why Michael's not wearing pants.
Oh.
Nice, informal, and irreverent today, my goodness, our intro says.
Yes, exactly.
We've been gone for 2 weeks, so you guys better watch out. We have a lot of craziness going on today. We obviously will get back to both of you here in just a moment, but before we do that, Michael, we need to pay some bills. Yep. Let us thank our sponsors here. That's right.
We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
And with so much going on around the Southland, those are two fantastic resources to keep you up to date, ladies and gentlemen. So, again, BreakdownExpress.com and PerformingArtsLive.com.
Obviously, and such great resources for so many people in the industry.
Yeah.
Michael, shall we take a moment to stay up to date here with our guests and bring them in just a moment? But before we do that, I want to be sure to hear about your 2 weeks that I've missed you and been gone. Did you do anything big? Did you change the world? Were there any massive changes?
I tried.
Unbelievable. I know you did. You worked so hard, man.
Didn't quite happen. But, I did have some great opportunities. I spent a day with the cast of Mamma Mia at the Hollywood Bowl.
Wow.
And did interviews for Broadway World TV and got to be part of the rehearsal process.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. And the show, you know, those summer musical, that summer musical, whatever it is at the Hollywood Bowl every year, for me, is kind of like, if you haven't gone any other time during their season, that's kind of what you have to do.
Have each of you been to the Hollywood Bowl, obviously, a number of times,
Yes.
Oh, man, I love that venue. Such an amazing venue. Yeah.
And it's, you know, of course, it's different seeing it on that big stage.
Right.
And with those jumbotrons, you know, which Steven Weber...
Are you sure you weren't at Dodger Stadium? Because they're both outdoor jumbotrons.
Yeah. Steven Weber, who was in the show.
Of course.
Was saying, because I asked him from his perspective, what if he had to do, what did he do being conscious of that fact and still carry out his role and intentions on the stage? And he said, it's frightening because you know that any look or gesture that you might make will be caught by those
hugely
by those things.
Yeah, that's right. And magnified.
So he said, he said, I'm a big actor, and I've had to pull way back. Even though it's, you know, 18,000 people in the audience.
He's a big actor, but he's so natural. I love what he does. Even though it's definitely larger, I think it's always so in character with him. I think it reads very well for him. He's a talent.
Indeed. And an incredibly talented man, and a very sweet man. The whole cast, you know, all of them were in high gear. So it was a wonderful weekend. Then, you know, going to the performance. So.
Well, and I know you saw some other theater this weekend, too, that we'll talk about a little bit later on. But, I mean, it was interesting when I was gone. I definitely had that feeling that, man, I got to get back plugged into L.A. It was such a disconnect for so long. I found myself going on local papers trying to check out what was going on while I was here. And so many amazing shows coming to Los Angeles over the next 2 months.
They are, indeed.
Shall we take a moment now and talk about a couple of those with our guest today?
I think so.
Let's do it.
Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, originated the role of Susie Simpson in the New York production of The Marvelous Wonderettes, written by Roger Bean, and can be heard on three Wonderettes cast recordings, The Marvelous Wonderettes, Winter Wonderettes, and Wonderettes Caps and Gowns.
An impressive array of regional credits includes appearances in Seussical, Titanic, Big Fish, Pride and Prejudice, and Mary Poppins.
Audiences have also seen her in How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Sweeney Todd, 1776, Ragtime, On the Town, Evita, Children of Eden, Annie Get Your Gun, Once Upon a Mattress, and Love, Loss, and What I Wore.
Her vocal talents can be heard as Tallulah, the monkey, and Barbie as the island princess, a copy of which I have in my hot little hand right now as it went with us across the country. My daughter loves it. And as the singing voice of Velma in Scooby-Doo and the Music of the Vampire, both available on DVD.
And she is currently gracing the stage in the Hudson Theater production of Honky Tonk Laundry, opening tomorrow, this Friday. And she is also honoring us with her presence in studio today. As we said earlier, on State of the Arts, let's give it up one more time for the very talented Betts Malone.
Yeah, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I love that music.
Okay. Who's singing that? This is from your show, but who's singing it? This is the original recording.
Uh-oh. Don't do this to me. Nancy Sinatra, of course.
There you go.
It's so funny. I got to tell you, that's such a famous show, too, because you got to love hearing that. But when I walk around L.A. singing These Boots Are Made for Walking, it gets some odd looks from people up and down Hollywood Boulevard. That's just the truth. There's just no doubt about it.
Really? So, from Hollywood Boulevard?
I know, right? And if I'm weirding people out on Hollywood Boulevard, you know I'm out
definitely
there.
Definitely is wrong.
So I got to tell you, Tallulah, I know you've done many hugely artistic, incredible credits, but for me, you will always be known as Tallulah the Monkey. Is that hard?
No, she's a great little character.
It's a great piece.
I love her.
Lots of fun. And I told you my kids are addicted to this. That is absolutely true. They love all the Barbie series. But it was funny because I think they have a very different content. Each one, I think, has different producers very often and that sort of thing. This one was a very cute and fun project. Did you enjoy working on it?
I did. And cool. I actually got to fly to Canada to do it, which was really exciting, too. I hadn't been there before, so it was very interesting.
That's great.
Let me ask you something. You are very much at your first call musical theater star here in the Southern California area and other parts of the country. And what percentage, though, of your voiceover work is part of your career versus your musical theater?
Not that much. I kind of lucked into a couple of these jobs, but then I've recently moved to San Diego, and I don't know that the voiceover industry is booming there. And so it's definitely been something I've been lucky enough to have a couple opportunities, but not. I haven't really, really done very much at all.
Yeah.
But you know, it's easier. I mean, we have friends that do the voiceover work now, and so much so that especially when you get on an animated series, which is where you really make your
everyone's
money.
Dream.
And it's true. They're doing it from the home-built studio in a closet somewhere and just turning it in, which seems to be the trend, and it saves a lot of money and time.
I was once in the studio of the great Don LaFontaine.
Oh, my goodness,
my idol.
I did Ten Commandments with Nita Whittaker, his wife, and she had a party for us, so that was thrilling, and his studio was unbelievable.
Yeah. I have a story I have to edit and make sure I can tell this on air, but I recently went out with a friend of mine, a very famous voiceover artist, like a world-renowned voiceover artist, to buy his home recording studio. He bought it from somebody on Craigslist or something, and we showed up there. And I love the anonymity of voiceover work, because he walked in, literally a world-famous talent, to buy this from this girl on Craigslist who was selling it because she wanted to buy a bigger studio. And she didn't know who he was, which was so funny because it was like he could walk around the world and he can go to work in sweatpants on occasion, you know, that sort of thing. And you realize how the voiceover artist is very different from the live theater audience.
Is this who I'm thinking
of? It probably is. Oh, probably. But it's so funny, too, because when you realize how much goes on in this industry, everybody works in this industry. And in that industry, you don't always work with people. You come in, you do your job, you leave, and you may never see the people who you worked with. So.
Well, you know, I mean, Betts, your speaking voice, the timbre of your voice is begging for, you know, voiceover in animation. So
that's right.
I would think. Do you have representation in that area?
I'm with KMR, and they are kind enough to submit me for quite a few things. Mm-hmm. But like I said, my location is a little bit of a problem right now. But my voice is probably never going to change.
So yeah,
I think there's all kinds
the
of
same
room
problem.
And time for that.
It is a career. Got to just get that little studio built so you can phone it in.
That's
it goes
right.
through the phone lines, and boom.
Isn't that unbelievable? Yeah. Well, now I want to talk about Honky Tonk Laundry. Also, that's the way I refer to my love life in high school. Honky Tonk Laundry List. You got to tell me about the show. Now, this is by the very well-known Roger Bean, creative mind behind The Marvelous Wonderettes, who, of course, you've known for years and years and years, yes.
Years and years and years.
And this is a two-person show, is that correct?
Me and Misty Cotton.
Unbelievable.
The brilliant Misty Cotton.
Misty's
absolutely
been on this
true.
Show.
Wow.
We love her.
Tell us how this came about, how you got into the show, and it's been a while in the making, is that correct?
Absolutely. I want to say it was either 12 or 13 years ago. We first did it at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater, where Roger premiered many of his works. And basically, we were doing Winter Wonderettes out there, and over drinks, I said, why don't you write a show for just me and Misty? And he did. It's lucky to have a friend that's capable.
No kidding. Yeah, I mean, a lot of us could write your show. It just may not be any good.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Fantastic.
So,
how great.
It's an opportunity to give a Hallmark card to the country western gamut of music, and it's just a thrill to do it. I've never really sung country music until I started doing this
show.
Do you
like it?
I love it. The storytelling, I mean, it really... Yeah. It parallels musical theater very much.
Right. That is so true. And it's interesting because early country music was even more so that way.
Oh, yeah. I think they have a beginning, middle, and an end to every song.
Usually involving dogs and beer and a lot of other things. I grew up in Kentucky. I love that style of music. But I think after Shania Twain, everything changed. Mm-hmm. It became very different, much more palatable.
Just what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And she is so beautiful and so cool. I mean, and you know, country music has been elevated to such a degree today that it is totally a competitor to pop music.
That's
it
absolutely
has its
right.
own major gigantic award shows which are very, very heavily paid attention to, and you know, to be a CMA artist is just like being a Grammy Award winner.
Now,
and they make the same money.
They do, absolutely.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, they can. I mean, we've seen crossover to movies from famous singers of country music. They go straight at Tim McGraw and Dwight
Yoakam.
Yeah, absolutely right. So you see that it has become so mainstream, much like NASCAR kind of brought stock car racing mainstream.
You know
as
what,
well,
though? I think it's because they actually, and you know, it's been a progressive process.
Absolutely.
Of course, from the great Patsy Cline era of music, of that style of country music, and her colleagues and so forth. But they've infused, I think, in today, the aspect of pop is infiltrated into these tunes orchestrally and tempo-wise. And the storytelling is still there in that great kind of way that only can be really relative to country. I'm a big fan of the TV series Nashville.
Sure.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
Oh, it's just kind of just on steroids.
It's based off the movie, correct? The movie
no,
Nashville.
It is not.
Are they totally unrelated?
Yeah.
I didn't know
it
that.
It is
my goodness,
a nighttime soap opera. It is like the Dynasty of this era. But it's incredibly fascinating. And fun. It's just fun. You know,
well, of course, we just lost a huge country music star, Glenn Campbell,
one
of the greatest guitar players out there, who in fact, when Brian Wilson was out of the Beach Boys for a while recovering, he went and played with the Beach Boys, I believe. And they said, I mean, these are the Beach Boys. I mean, great musicians, great ears. And they said they'd never heard anybody play like that. You know, it wasn't just strumming and picking. It was real, honest-to-goodness musical knowledge and really amazing to hear. Obviously, a great legacy of work he left behind as well.
Well, Betts, one thing that I know our audiences want to know, I'd like to know, is tell us a little bit about the plot.
So Honky Tonk Laundry, Lana Mae Hopkins is my character.
What a great name.
She, with her husband Earl, run a laundromat that was left to her called the Wishy-Washy Washateria. It was left to her from her Nana Rosie Mae, which she got her middle name from.
Wow.
And she helped out a lot when she was a child in the laundromat with her mom. And so quite a bit of stories about mom and grandma all the way through the show. But she runs the place kind of all by herself. Earl's not really ever around because men are about as useful as a steering wheel on a mule. And Misty Cotton's character, Katie Lane Murphy, not to be confused with Katie Lane, wanders into the laundromat with some problems and a lot, great deal of mystery. And through the course of it, we realize that she needs a job, and so she comes and works for Lana. She has no skills whatsoever, and she actually doesn't really do anything except for sing.
How do I get that job? That sounds exactly like my life. It's perfect.
But it's really a nice little back and forth of storytelling. Telling and sharing and male bashing a little bit.
Nice.
And friendship. Really, I mean, I think the number one thing is just friendship.
And you would call this a comedy with heart more than
absolutely.
I think Roger's very well known for that sort of thing. It's not a comedy. It's not a drama. It's a story of life, and any good life has both.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of really nice, poignant moments.
Well, and aside from These Boots Are Made for Walking, which we heard a little bit of, Stand By Your Man is in this show, Before He Cheats, Independence Day, and many more from some contemporary artists as well, right?
Yeah, and we also do a little homage to some of the old school things. We have a whole little section that's the Grand Old Laundry, and we celebrate Patsy and all the gals. So
how
it's
fun.
Cool.
The Grand Old Laundry, that's great.
Well, you know, I hope more people are into country music than, I mean, I never used to be at all. So this has just all happened within the last, I would say, year for me.
Yeah.
Well, we did have a lovely little Gold Star review just this last week of someone that said that they have never liked country music, and they had the greatest time ever. So it's not necessarily, because
just
of the storytelling involved, I do think that you would enjoy it. It's enjoyable even whether you like the genre or not.
Right. Well, and it sounds like anything, it's more about the characters, and if their music is country music, it's telling their story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much just the music, it's the characters that are really the heart of the show, correct?
True.
Fantastic. And obviously such a musical talent behind it, I'm excited to see it.
Absolutely. And this is, what, 90 minutes?
No, it's a two-act.
It's a two-act?
Yeah,
okay.
So our act one is just under an hour, and act two is at 45, so with a standard intermission. And very Roger Bean. Act one is a is a huge setup for a really fantastic and fun act two.
Right, cool. Now, is there a time change similar to the Marvelous Wanderettes or anything like that?
3 days.
Oh,
three
my
days
goodness.
To put on a big old show.
Wow, very cool. Very cool. Well, the show we're talking about is Honky Tonk Laundry, Hudson Main Stage Theater. That's located at 6539 Santa Monica Boulevard here in L.A.
Absolutely, and starring our guest Betts Malone and Misty Cotton, and it opens, as we said earlier, Friday, August 11th, not just tomorrow, and it's presented through September 17th.
That's right.
It's already been through its previews, and all performances are Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Hudson Main Stage Theater in a great part of the Theater Row District in West Hollywood area at 6539 Santa Monica Boulevard. Street and lot parking are available, and tickets are very affordable for Friday and Saturday evenings and Saturday evenings and the Sunday matinees. For tickets, Andrew?
You can obviously call ahead and go to the phone number there, which is 323-960-7773. But I think the easiest way to do it is just Google Honky Tonk Laundry, and this will obviously come up with such a unique name. Either that or it may be pictures from me back in Kentucky. But either way, I think you'll probably get some good entertainment. Or you can always go to plays411/Honky Tonk Laundry, and you'll certainly come up with a great chance to go see this show on any of those nights coming up.
Okay, so Betts, this is what I want to go back now. I want to go back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm. This is the hard-hitting point of
when
the interview.
When did you know that you were destined to be a performer or wanted to be a performer?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I did my first show when I was 8 years old at the Moonlight Amphitheater. It was their first show, and it was my first show. We celebrate that anniversary every year.
Some irony there.
And my husband is now the new artistic director there. So it's been a very full circle time in my life. You know, my parents just they exposed us to everything. My mom did one musical in college, Bells Are Ringing, which, of course, until I left that home, I thought it was the most famous musical in the world. I thought everyone knew Bells Are Ringing, and they do not. But it's a family favorite, of course. And I think they just encouraged it, but I knew, after that first show, that was just it. I couldn't do anything else. And
but did you sing naturally?
We all sang. Yeah. We took long car trips to Grandma's, 13 hours up the coast to the Redwood Forest.
Wow.
And the whole family sings. And my brother and sister both have been performers. I'm the only one still really doing it full time.
Mm-hmm. You're the only one refusing to grow up.
Exactly.
I like it.
My mom costumes, my dad built scenery. Which were not their original vocations, but they started as volunteer parents and then kind of parlayed that into careers of their own. So
wow.
It's just been a nice journey.
And how did you meet Steve Blondini?
I asked
because of not only being very fond of this man, but he is so incredibly talented.
Oh, he's amazing.
I know, of course, he was a performer and still does every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And as you said, executive artistic director for Moonlight in Vista.
Yeah.
Down south there by San Diego. And formerly of Musical Theater West here in Long Beach. Mm-hmm. He brought some great stuff into that building. So
we were cast in a production of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat at the Curtis Theater in Brea.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
He was Levi and I was the narrator. And he was at the time full-time at Disney as the Mad Hatter and Merlin. Wow. So that's who I married. Somebody who says I'm married to a director or somebody who puts me in shows. Or at one time he was my agent. I've actually been married to all those people, but I married the Mad Hatter.
So somebody had to.
That's right.
Exactly, somebody had to. So that's when it all started millions of years ago. And in February, we celebrate our 23rd year of marriage.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You don't even look old enough to have that many years of marriage. Seriously.
Amazing. That's true. Very true. Wow.
On your bucket list, what shows remain?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. You know, I've just been so lucky. I've gotten to do so
because I think
so
you've
many.
Done them all, probably.
Yeah,
right?
Mamma Mia is on my bucket list, and it might be coming true pretty soon.
We could have had Michael Caine, one of the people at the Hollywood Bowl. You could have stepped right in, you know?
Yeah. I'd love another crack at that Pride and Prejudice that I worked on last year at La Mirada.
Oh, yeah?
It's not quite made its way to Broadway yet, and I enjoyed playing the role of Jane Austen so much, so I'd love to pop back into that, wherever it ends up going.
That was the world premiere of that production, right?
It was,
amazing, yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm thrilled to be getting older. You know, usually people are like spitting on their fingers about that, but I can't wait to play Mama Rose. I can't wait. I just saw
Gypsy, of course. Yeah.
Bette Midler on Broadway, and I cried from like curtain up to curtain down, and now I can't wait. You know, I played Minnie Faye 5 times, but I can't wait to play Dolly Levi. And so all those, I hope people continue to produce the classics, because I've got the classics on my list. It's a mile long. I want to play Mame, and I want to do all of those things. So I hope that people continue to produce them.
I think that it's mandatory. They have to do that because they have to give this generation exposure to those shows, which are so important and so much from the golden age, which is why we have these.
Well, and it's through exposure to the classics that we learn how to create new classics.
Absolutely.
So if we don't study those, then how do we do it?
You know, and speaking of Hello, Dolly, it's so interesting to me with Miss Midler in that role. I know she doesn't do all 8 shows, but she's got a great understudy.
Mm-hmm. Donna.
Yes.
Wow.
Who certainly is worth the price of admission.
And she's got a great understudy as well. And I know her cover, or understudy for lack of a better word, has gone on. And and to great reviews, everybody has said how fantastic and what a hard job that is to be. To not be Bette and not be Donna and still go on in the lead in that show.
Exactly.
Oh, so hard, yeah.
It's a very hard job, and I hear she's amazing.
And that also, though, speaks for the show itself, too, I think. Because I understand, without having seen the production, that the sets and the costumes are extraordinary. I guess way above and beyond what they were originally.
Right.
Wow.
So the price of admission is a little steep since Miss Midler went
I'm
into
sure.
the show, but probably well worth it.
Usually is.
Excuse me. Did you see it? Has anybody seen it?
I did. I saw it.
Oh, you
yeah.
did see it?
Yeah.
She couldn't see half of it. She was crying for most of the show.
Oh,
so.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you say that.
And I have to be honest. Like, that was the one thing on our trip that my husband said, we have to see it. And I honestly was like, you know, if we don't get tickets, it's okay. I have 2 friends in the show, so I was excited about that, but the curtain comes up, and somewhere into Sunday Close, which is not very far into the show, I just started crying, and I just couldn't stop. It was overwhelming. It really was. It's a perfect gift to the theater community to be able to see a production of Hello, Dolly like that. Wow. And it's not even like, I know you said the costumes and the sets are beyond, but they're beyond with the original intent attached to them. So it's just like a polished penny. Mm-hmm. Nobody tried to make it a silver dollar. You know what I mean? So it's just perfect.
Sounds like it.
No doubt about it. Bets, would you be so kind as to hang around with us for a little bit
more? Oh, yeah, I'm here till the cows
I appreciate
come
it. We're excited. We got to talk about a couple quick shows. We're going to come back. And you have a special connection to our second guest, too. We're going to talk about a little bit as well. So now we want to let you know about another fantastic show running right here now with Pacific Resident Theater in Venice, Rhinoceros.
In a reimagining of Eugene Ionesco's comic masterpiece, citizens in a small provincial town outside of Paris discover how quickly one's sense of humanity can be eroded when facing the dangers of a herd mentality. Named Critics' Choice by the LA Times, Rhinoceros is a timely and brilliant indictment of impending fascism, created by a master of avant-garde.
Originally written as a response and criticism to the sudden upsurge of communism, fascism, and Nazism during the events preceding World War II, the play explores mob mentality and conformity. The author was inspired to write a piece as he watched the rise of fascist Iron Guard in Romania. He stated that when people no longer share your opinions, when you can no longer make yourself understood by them, one has the impression of being confronted with monsters. Rhinos, for example, they have a mixture of candor and ferocity and will kill you with the best of conscience.
Broadway World called this production a thrilling ride, so ironically funny and sad that various lines of dialogue throughout Ionesco's comedy resonate in its timely relevance today.
Come see the play that the LA Times described as illuminated with darkly hilarious urgency in Pacific Residence Theater's absurdly superbly staged, disconcertingly timely revival. It may be both.
That's right. Rhinoceros runs 8 p.m. Thursday through Saturday and 3 p.m. on Sunday through September 10th.
Pacific Resident Theater is located at 703 Venice Boulevard in Venice, CA.
And tickets range from $25 to $34 and can be purchased online at pacificresidenttheater.com or by calling 310-822-8392.
And that's obviously a very good example of what we're talking about, the classics being given new life, and a play that certainly had meaning when it was written, coming back now to certainly play to new audiences. Michael, you saw some great theater this past week as well, yeah?
Did I?
Did you see Spamalot? I'm dying to see Spamalot. Now, and from everything I've heard, and not just from you because you're a little bit biased, but from everybody I've heard, this is a fantastic show. Very much like the Broadway original, yeah?
Well, original Broadway sets, original Broadway costumes, Carol Bentley directing and choreographing, who has a long history with this show, and wonderful stars of our own, Jeff Skowron, Mark Ginsberg.
Now, who's Mark playing again?
Nick Tubbs.
So funny.
Plays about four different roles in the show.
Oh, really? Mark playing more than one role? Yeah. Unheard of, you know? What was he, 18
Martin
roles?
Martin Kildare is King Arthur.
Unbelievable.
It is pee in your pants funny. Seriously.
I'm sorry, what is it?
Pee in your pants funny.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first on State of the Arts. This show is pee in your pants funny.
That's right, so take an extra pair when you go.
That's right.
Really.
During the trip, I reached into my coat pocket and I found an old pull-up from one of my kids. They're now seven and eight now. And I was like, well, I'm not going to need that anymore. So extra pants, maybe they can make those selling those concession stands.
The beauty of it was the fact that 3D always, has something up their sleeve with their productions,
always.
And this was certainly no different. They're today's current business of politics and so forth has slid into this show a little bit, and to make it more friendly to the audience, especially the younger people who don't know that Monty Python humor necessarily. But boy, oh boy, it still holds up after so many years. Yeah. So we're talking about, what was the movie? Was in 1975, I think.
Are you talking about Life of Brian or Holy Grail?
Holy Grail.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Yeah.
This is based on. But, and David Lamoureux, who is an amazing musical director, is conducting the 14-piece orchestra, and boy, he makes it sound like 30 pieces.
Wow.
It's really just flawless, you know, from top to bottom, and the audiences are screaming and laughing so hard. And that's really nice to see people come out with a big smile on their face.
Well, in this show, I mean, it is right in line with the TV show. If you liked the TV show and you want to take your kids and expose them to Monty Python, this is a great way to do it. Right. Plus, you get them at the live theater, which is such a benefit as well. So.
And the show is currently at the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center through this coming weekend, and then it moves over the following weekend to the Cerritos Center for the Performing Arts for two weekends.
Both great venues, obviously.
Yes,
now, how can people get tickets for that?
Simply go to 3dtheatricals.org online, and you can purchase tickets that way, and depending on where you're going. And the Cerritos Center for the Performing Arts, you can go to their website as well.
And obviously, for any performer who doesn't know 3D Theatricals, they cast a ton of people each year and always top-notch talent. If you want to find out about their auditions or anything like that, go see this production, get involved with their season. This truly is an amazing group working here just south of LA.
Yeah, they do beautiful work, and they're very passionate about it for being such a young group of producers. And I must say, one of them, Daniel Dawson, is in this show. And he is soaring. He is just, you know, right.
He's one of the D's, correct?
Three
exactly. D's. Awesome.
The roles that he plays are right up his alley.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, Michael, I think it's that time. Shall we bring in this next young lady?
I think so. Absolutely.
Just one of many tremendous productions going on here in Southern California, Michael. And now, shall we turn our attention to this young lady?
Yes, we should.
Oh, here it comes. You hear that?
This is the original recording by the Cordettes.
I actually knew that one.
You did?
We should have quizzed her. Now, what year, Michael, do you know? Do you have any idea?
1954.
Unbelievable.
It's kind of sweet, isn't it?
It is. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to Miss Kate. I'll play this underneath if that's all right, Michael.
Boy, oh boy. She is an Ohio native. She graduated from the musical theater department of Ball State University, home of David Letterman, and cornhole tournaments, whatever that means, and brought her sarcastic commentary and self-professed lack of parallel parking skills to sunny Southern California, and aren't we glad?
She was a Broadway World Los Angeles nominee for her co-headlining cabaret, The Pleasure Is Yours, at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal.
That's right.
Local credits include Meet Me in St. Louis at Cabrillo Music Theater, Kiss Me Kate at the Glendale Center Theater, Oklahoma at Musical Theater of Los Angeles, and most recently in the musical premiere of Save Me a Spot, which was a winner of the Encore Producers Award at the Hollywood Fringe Festival.
She also appeared in Cats for Cats, a celebrity benefit concert with Fred Willard at the historic Orpheum Theater, and is now delighting audiences in The Marvelous Wonderess, with Sierra Madre Playhouse on that stage now through a just-released extended date of September 17th. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the wonderful Kate Ponzio. Kate,
hello.
Nice to see you.
Now, I don't know if you saw what he did there, but did you notice wonderful?
I did.
Kate, took me 20 minutes to come up with that for the script last
Very
night.
Good.
What a great show, and a connection to our first guest here, correct? Now, had you ever met before?
No, but it's overwhelming trying to talk about this next to the
Right? No pressure, girl.
Yeah, I know. Good times.
Well, what a great thing. And obviously, Marvelous Wonderettes had an arduous journey to make it on stage. Isn't that correct?
That's very correct.
I don't know if you've heard much about this, Kate, but I was researching it a little bit last night, and there were people who hated the idea of a show that was that framework of storytelling. They're like, oh no, it's not a narrative, it's not a complete narrative, it's not a through line. It was really strange to read some of these reviews, and almost everyone was bowled over by the final production and how well received it was. So, what a great story. Is it hard to be a part of that legacy? So many great women have played these four roles in this show. Are you aware of that, and kind of do you have that sense of history that you're involved in?
Oh, certainly, especially being in Southern California. It's
right.
Not like we, you know, are in the confines of Ohio and no one knows the originals, so it's very overwhelming. The only good thing I will say is I searched for some source material and tried to find videos. I've watched the Broadway.com.
Oh, interesting.
I've seen so many videos just to kind of get the essence of that, but probably it was good I could not find a full bootleg or anything. So it forced me to kind of create it beyond the original.
You have to stay with your own interpretation,
yeah,
of course, that way. That's
yeah.
Cool. I've seen the show a number of times, and each time I kind of go in going, okay, I've seen this show, and I'm always touched by each individual characterization because they so much are about the women playing the roles rather than just the roles, which is, I think, the way a great show should be.
Well, the Los Angeles production ran for, what, 2 years?
Perhaps? 2 years, yeah. At the El Portal.
That's
and
right.
Who did you play again in that production?
I was Susie Simpson.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, so this is, we need to take a moment here and Midwesternize Michael. He's a California boy. He's got, tell him, please explain to him. First of all, my mom went to Ball State, so.
I know where Ball State is.
But yes, but do you know what cornhole is?
I do. I'm afraid to ask.
Now, this may get you in gambling debts.
I'm with bets.
It's fascinating how many people don't know about this. I went to college where everyone was playing cornhole, which is a totally proper game.
Absolutely.
In the front lawn.
Sure. I played mine in tux.
So. It's you have a hacky sack, and then
a
you
what?
Throw it. You know, a hacky sack?
That's right.
You've heard
it's
of
it. It's a sack
bags,
of hack.
Yeah.
A beanbag.
A beanbag,
sorry.
Yeah,
a
beanbag.
That's
yeah.
maybe my fault. And then there is a board with holes. You throw it at said hole. You hope it goes in said hole. If not, you hope it right. lands on the board. It's a really exciting game.
They play helps. At bars now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a drinking game, too. And in fact, it helps if you play it drunk. I was much better drunk than I was sober.
I just want to say, explaining it, you need a beer in your hand.
That, there's no doubt about
I
it.
I guess. Yeah. That game now, the way she just explained it, I think at the opening of State Fair Musical Theater Guild, they had a midway, you know, going up to the doors mm-hmm. of the Alex Theater, and I think I won at that game.
Well,
see?
There you go.
He's a champion. He didn't even know it.
Didn't, and didn't know I was playing That's that right. game.
It may well, not have been officially sanctioned there. I'm not sure.
And they weren't banter, you know, billing it as cornholes.
That's right.
Is it everybody did cornhole?
Just cornhole.
Yes, people are usually
singular. Yeah.
Offended if they don't actually know what the game is called, but yes, it's cornhole.
Yes. Well, now, you got to tell me, Kate, how did you end up at Ball State? Obviously, it's in the middle of the country, but it has a great musical theater history as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does, and it's a great growing program. When I was auditioning, they had just been changing a lot of the staff, and it had grown. I mean, goodness, Sutton Foster is
right.
comes to direct a musical there every year.
I love her. I love that woman.
I wish I knew her. I hear only beautiful things.
You're like, yeah. I started this when I was young. Right. Girl.
But yeah, it's a fantastic program, and it was important to me to find a program that was had it close enough to home so I could visit, so it's 3.5 hours, but far enough away so I could
play cornhole all day.
play cornhole in peace. And the program was always, I loved it because as much of the emphasis was on the acting side as well as singing. So I loved it. It really made me focus on being an actor-singer as opposed to just a voice, which I kind of always had been when I was growing up. So I loved my time at Ball State.
Well, I think if I have the timeline correct, you then came out to Los Angeles shortly after graduation. Is that mm-hmm. correct? Learned to parallel park very quickly. Hopefully.
Still working on it.
Now you have cars. You can just back right into it, take your hands off the wheel. But then I believe you participated in a little-known event called LA's Next Great Stage Star. Is that correct?
Indeed, I did.
And that was with the amazing Michael Sterling. And you were discovered from that, is correct? You got your agent from that. Is that true?
No. That's the awkward part. I did not. But I'll spin this into the positive. No, but I learned so much, and it really was a fascinating one. I'm still close with a good amount of people that
of
are
course.
In that group. And I learned so much. And, I mean, that's his husband. We
husband
were just talking.
Gesture.
That's what I was going to get. Right. I love that idea. Now, you know, your husband, just so people know, your husband is not only a director, but he's a former performer. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And regularly judges Stage Star.
Not regularly, unfortunately, because of the distance. And,
yeah, we've
and
moved now. So
I'm sorry. I'm trying to draft him in
south.
For next year. So.
Yeah. Well, but we'd love to. I'd pay his train ride. I'd pay it for a plane.
That's and I tell you, he's got a stipend coming to him if he calls in right now, ladies
and
gentlemen.
Are you listening?
Are you listening?
But here's the so he came in and he judged the year that you were there, mm-hmm. and then here you are sitting together, what, how many years later? Is it 5 years later now?
Oh, it's just a wink of time.
A wink of time,
yeah,
a blink of time.
Think about that.
And how did you end up getting, what was your next show after Stage Star? Where did things go from there?
I did practically the season at Glendale Center Theater.
Wow.
It was close. And I also work in commercial real estate, so a lot of this is trying to fit shows in between, which is pretty crazy, but did work at Cabrillo, which is, that's such a great
we love Cabrillo, absolutely.
And kind of
newly
around.
Named now.
Newly
Cabrillo has changed
that.
Their name. Isn't that amazing?
Five star.
That's right, five star. And, of course, Will over there is doing such great work and so many wonderful people. You worked with them, and then you continued on local L.A. shows mostly and eventually started doing great stuff.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I kind of took a little bit of time off because I had to found it was important to pay rent and not get...
You wanted to do that every month.
I did.
Okay.
I found it was helpful.
Okay,
people
that's up to you.
That. So yeah, I did, but this year's been great. I did a fringe show that my good friend had written, and that went beautifully. And then
wow.
And then, of course, doing Wonderettes now. And
of course.
It's been such a joy.
Well, let's talk about that, too, because you're working with somebody who's a good friend of mine and who I have great respect for, Robert Mara.
Yeah.
Tell us about that process. Does Robert give you the rein to
absolutely
do what you want, or does he just pull you back
in? He just gives you line reading after line reading.
Yeah.
<Really
full. laughs>
No, he's fantastic. So he choreographed and directed. And, goodness, this show is so complicated because it's four-part harmony.
Right.
I play the bass of the, which probably is not too shocking once you hear my speaking voice. It's not too much of a stretch. But it's four-part harmony. It's learning the choreography, but then learning it well enough in your body that then you can forget all of the everything you've learned and then put it in your body as the character.
Sure.
Because the show means nothing if it's just four bodies singing a review. And so much of the beauty of this show, and the more we do it, we find all these lovely little elements with each character, is that each person is such a unique character and stands out. The nicest comments we've gotten after the show is that within minutes, the first song is Sandman, which you played, and within moments of that first song starting, we keep getting comments that you can tell instantly who each person is on that stage, each of the four characters, which is great.
And yeah.
It's such a beautiful show. But yeah, Robert certainly guided us in the right direction but really allowed us to create it beyond, help it jump off the page to what works for us.
Well, he's a very intuitive director and, of course, a performer in the past. And one of the things that he brought to Sierra Madre Playhouse, speaking of country music, was Patsy Cline.
Very cool.
And it became a huge, very extended piece for them. And I went to see it. It was really stunning. It was actually the first time that I really, really got into that show. And the country music helped.
Sure, yeah.
And a beautiful production. And that theater is in such a charming little spot here in Southern California. You know,
Sierra Madre is the best area. Yeah.
Sitting
so
at
charming.
The cool. bottom yeah. of the mountains. And
it's so close, too. I mean, it's just right outside of Pasadena, but it's this charming
little village.
It's beautiful.
And you can have some good meals at some of the restaurants, but all within walking distance.
Very walkable,
absolutely. Theater. So I'm coming this weekend.
Beautiful.
It's yeah, great. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to have lunch with a friend and go over and see this lady in this show.
Cool.
And I've only seen it with our other guest. It's the only other time I've seen it.
We'll have
but
to
I
do
think
it
I saw it twice, two or three times
right.
with you in it.
We'll do it in coordination with Honky Tonk Laundry, and we can just do a day of Roger Bean kind of stuff. That'd be great, yeah. So one of the things I want to go ahead and tell, most of our listeners, of course, are musical aficionados. In fact, if I get anything wrong, I get 12 texts going, yeah, that's not exactly appropriate. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm a fight choreographer, I didn't know. But The Marvelous Wonderettes was one of the shows that I wasn't familiar with a few years ago, and I saw three or four productions right in sequence, and I was surprised at what a fun show this is. Can you tell a little people about the plot and kind of what they're going to see when they come to see Marvelous Wonderettes?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a jukebox musical, but that doesn't it doesn't clarify just how lovely and what heart and what humor there is in the show. The first act is it's four girls who are song leaders for their school's prom. So the first act is all 50s music, all the 50s music that you love.
Set in the 1950s, correct?
Set in the 1950s.
When the
absolutely.
Girls are 18 years old?
Exactly, okay. Absolutely. And then, so it's, Hold Me, Thrill Me, Sandman, Dream. There's just so many beautiful classic songs. And then the second act is their 10-year reunion, and it's picking up where everyone left off. So it's fascinating to see, if there's some of the girls who dreamed this dream of romanticized what adulthood would be, and then picking up 10 years later to see where they've left off, and then so the second act is all 60s music that you know and love.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a great show, and we get people in the audience who know all the music, and you can see them bopping their heads, singing along, and then you get. Some of my favorites are these little girls, because it's so exciting to see just four girls, women on that stage who are adoring it, who keep coming back and bringing their family, then their grandparents. It's just lovely. So it really has something for everyone, and you don't have to have grown up in that time.
That's right.
I keep getting comments, and I'm sure you heard that all the time, Bets, when people coming that heard jukebox musical and maybe wasn't necessarily something they thought they'd enjoy, but they were coming because it's in town or they knew someone and are really enjoying it. It's a really just fun 2-hour night at the theater. It's just
I think
light.
Forever Plaid and some of those other ones as well have kind of used this very much to their advantage. And I think Marvelous Wonderettes does it so well in the fact that it is for women on stage, which is hard to find these days. Not many people do that. It's also hard to eliminate that natural dynamic of male-female and still have an effective story. And this does it so well because everybody in their life, males, females, young, old, are all incorporated in the stories. It's just they're the storytellers.
And the
which
boys
I love
are very
about.
Present.
Absolutely right. Absolutely.
<I've never seen them. laughs>
In fact, one of them I think is actually referenced to in the back of the theater a number of times. And I was sitting one time where they were looking right at me. I was like, "Am I in the show?" And didn't know it. Unbelievable. But now I got to ask one thing: as you've been through this production, it is a family-friendly production, correct?
Absolutely.
Mostly, I believe it's mostly very friendly material. But have you been impressed by the number of young kids who have known these songs from the 60s and 70s?
You know, so the kids that we're getting are. A lot of them are around like the 9, 10, 8 range. Some of them know them, but we just had a girl who originally came with her dad, then brought her mom and dad back to the show.
Oh, cool.
And the mom was saying how she knows all the lyrics at this point. She was YouTubing all the songs and now has a total appreciation for these songs, which are so classic.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful to watch these little kids who didn't know these songs now have such a huge appreciation for it.
Well, I finished a gig in in Minnesota, and I'm zipping down through Colorado, and my little boy bought a Colorado State headband. And I look in my rearview mirror, and he's on his headphones singing Michael Jackson, "I Got the Feeling." And I just thought it was so good. It was such a cool thing to see how that music has been eternal through the 50s, 60s, and 70s as well, to a point. I really loved that. And Marvelous Wonderettes captures that very well.
Absolutely.
So worth a visit, no doubt.
Absolutely.
Michael,
and to see the show.
Absolutely.
Which will, as we said earlier, it has been extended through September 17th.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy. You simply contact, for reservations, contact 626, area code 355-4318, or visit the Sierra Madre Playhouse.org site on the internet for online ticketing opportunities. And the Sierra Madre Playhouse, as we said, is located in the very charming area of in and around Pasadena at the foot of the mountains there. It's just a beautiful, mm-hmm. beautiful landscape. And it is just east of Pasadena. There is ample free parking behind the playhouse.
Such a nice thing.
87 there. West Sierra Madre Boulevard in Sierra Madre.
Tickets $25 to $35. Obviously a great night out, and you can see some really amazing theater. Great people involved. Jeffrey Schoenberg, who I love, a great costumer, and so many wonderful talents involved in this show.
So, Andrew, it's that time. We have come to that time.
That time. What time are you talking
about? And now, embarrassing moments.
That time. Unbelievable.
Yes.
Does anybody have a moment that comes to mind, an embarrassing moment in their theater or performance career that you would like to share with our listeners? They're like, nope, I'm out of here.
Okay, just has a few.
There are two quick ones. There's one for Wonderettes. Betty Jean, my character, is very physical. This is luckily not during a performance, but during a tech run. To give a little backstory, as a child, I used to do gymnastics until I was at recess in elementary school. I flipped on a bar and I bit my tongue in half.
Oh, no.
So I have a fear of my head going towards the ground.
Oh,
reasonably.
Wow.
And so in the middle, I do a cartwheel in the show, and one tech, my brain said, "Oh no!" And just shut down, and I just crashed upon my head and body. We played off, but that was awkward to say the least.
Did they stop the rehearsal and come check on you? And
no, we just kind of went with it.
Plus,
I play an opera Betty Jean in half, so it seemed like maybe just a really bold character choice.
And plus, once you bit your tongue in half, you know it's like it can't be that bad. She's good after that.
No,
my goodness!
Absolutely.
Wow!
Oh. No. Yeah.
Oh, that is a tough one.
Yeah.
You said you had two?
Well, goodness. I did a production of Oklahoma, also directed by Robert Merrick. And there was an entry point through the back of the house where we did a handful of our large group moments. And my brain, again, I swear I'm a trustworthy actor, but my brain shut down, and I couldn't keep track of which entrance this was compared to the others, and I walked out, and your really choice is left or right, and I started to walk left, and everyone's going filing to their homes on hay bales on Aunt Eller's large home. I look to the left. That certainly doesn't look right. Then I start just casually scrolling to the right. That really doesn't look right. I look to the left, and that definitely looks wrong. So I start backing up, and I just awkwardly sit down on a hay bale, and I look over to see my dance partner on the left-hand side just staring at me.
Now, which character were you playing?
Oh, the really pivotal role of Kate, the giggling ensemble member.
See, if you'd been playing Gertie, you just throw your legs up in the air and smile, and it looks
exactly.
like you meant to do it.
So. Exactly. So it was not a huge loss.
Big your part.
And Gertie Cummins, man.
That's cornholes. That's the game, cornholes.
Yeah,
there you go.
A full segue back to ourselves. Oh, well, obviously, those are rough experiences, but you've survived, and now your career is going great once again, correct? So
exactly.
No tongue bitten. How did you come back with a tongue bitten half? I mean, did it affect your speech and your singing for an extended period of time?
Did you sing like this?
Yeah.
Right.
They sewed it together while I was awake.
Wow. Oh, my God.
I did it in elementary school before they thought people could break, so they gave me a Dixie cup with a cube of ice and then an extra one. So when that filled with blood, I had an extra.
Oh, so you had an extra. You're good.
Absolutely. They couldn't get hold of my parents, so they sent me back to class and finally got a hold of someone. But, it was like a starfish. I think they just thought it'd regenerate. I don't know. So they sewed it together while I was awake. It was super fun.
Were you crying through the whole thing? Or did they numb?
No, I think if my memory serves me correctly, I tried to convince them that I was cool, no problem.
Because you're
right,
so embarrassed.
When I would convince the nurse, I would rip my hand out of theirs and try to rip the needles. This is fun story.
Yeah, I think we just lost half our listeners.
Bet's
That's right. That's what you got.
Well, I have a few, but the one that comes to mind right now, because you did throw something out there earlier, is I was doing a production of A Little Night Music at the Moonlight, my hometown theater, and I was playing Petra. And at the beginning of my wonderful song, Stephen Sondheim's beautiful masterpiece, The Miller's Son, I had this, the lights came up on me and I was kissing Frid, and then we would roll downstage and he'd kind of like lay in a very attractive position and then I'd sing Miller's Son over him. And one night we rolled and I sang Miller's Son and Miller's Son went wonderfully, and then at the very end of it I would kiss him and pick him up and we'd walk off the stage, and as we walked off the stage he pointed out to me that my left breast was completely out of my and I have no idea when it happened.
But ticket sales for that show skyrocketed after. That's so funny.
I've never been so mortified. I'm turning bright red talking about
it. But aren't you glad you didn't know during the song?
I'm so glad I didn't know. And honestly, my mom, of course, is in the audience. She didn't even notice. What does that say about
it shows she loves your singing.
I feel that the orchestra probably had the best view, and that's okay.
Oh, my goodness.
They're part of the family.
They're in a pit.
Aren't you glad that live theater's not taped.
Wow,
you
know? People got their money's worth and more on that night, didn't they?
Oh, well, ladies and gentlemen, if our guests can survive that, there is nothing that we can't deal with in live performance, right?
Absolutely. My God.
What a great show today. Lots of fun. Michael, great to see you again.
Thank you, and you too, Andrew, after those 8,000 miles.
That's right.
That you traveled.
As we always tell our listeners, though, now is a great time in Los Angeles as the summer season ends here. Get out and see some shows. Certainly go see The Marvelous Wonderettes at Sierra Madre Playhouse. Tickets are available very easily by just visiting SierraMadrePlayhouse.org, and they'll hook you up right there with tickets.
And Honky Tonk Laundry, of course, at the Hudson Theater, which opens tomorrow evening, Friday, August 11th, and it will be there at the Hudson through the 17th of September. And for tickets, plays411.com/Honky Tonk Laundry, or just plays411.com and insert what you're looking for, or visit HonkyTonkLaundry.com.
That's right.
Or pick up that darn phone that's in your hand 24 hours a day, 323-960-7773.
And we highly recommend you go see these two amazing performers who are kind enough to join us today. Also, of
course,
Spamalot is now playing at Redondo Beach Playhouse.
It is indeed this weekend.
We told you a little bit about Rhinoceros as well that's playing in Venice. Go check those out, seeperformingartslive.com, and see what's going on around you. Ladies, thank you for being here today.
Thank
we
you.
Greatly appreciate it.
Yep.
Michael, where will we see you next week?
On the radio?
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.